David Banner again. This is a continuation of chapter one. There's a lot of information in this chapter, and I couldn't get it all in the first podcast, so here's the second one. All of you have probably heard the acronym FEAR. It stands for False Evidence Appearing Real. That's a very accurate description of fear. Fear, what fear does, it constricts the reality of the person who is fearful. So you don't really see the whole reality. You are just constantly scanning the environment for threats to your personal security. It can be argued that after 9/11, the Bush administration became experts in, at manipulating people through fear. There was a great quote by Hermann Göring, Hitler's number two man, after he was sentenced at the Nuremberg trials. Here's the quote. "Naturally, the common people don't want war, neither in Russia nor in England, or for that matter in Germany. This is understood. But after all, it is the leaders of the country that determine the policy, and it's always a simple matter to drag the people along, whether it's a democracy or a fascist dictatorship or a parliament or a communist dictatorship. Voice or no voice, the people can easily be brought to the bidding of the leaders. This is easy. All you have to do is tell them they're being attacked and denounce the peacemakers for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to danger. It works the same in every country." As we continue to explore the Enneagram, you'll see that there are certain personality types that are more prone to fear than others, but all ego-identified people are fearful at their core. And what are they most afraid of? They're afraid of death. The ego fears its death, most acutely at all times, because at a deep level in ourselves, we know we little egos are out of our league trying to run the universe. So fear is our constant companion in the egoic state. We try to mask its effects through achievements, denial, fun, alcohol, drugs, vacations, you name it, but fear is always in the background. That's why most of us assume that life is about working hard, retiring, having some fun, and then we die. Okay. The bad news is there's no way to get rid of the fear if we cling to the ego's sense of personal identity. The good news is we don't have to choose that identity. On a minute-to-minute basis, we literally choose to see ourselves as separate and alone in an essentially meaningless and hostile universe, with only our wits and luck to get us through. It's a choice, albeit an habitual one that we never question, but it's still a choice. This is a very stressful way to go. This is why we need so much sleep at night. It takes a lot of energy to keep out reality, the reality of our oneness with all there is. This startling fact becomes clear when one realizes that the separate ego state of consciousness is a choice, moment by moment. We're so habituated to it, we don't see it as a choice, but it is one nonetheless. And since it's a false identity, it takes psychic energy to hold the illusion together, hence our tiredness at the end of the day. So one of the major benefits in choosing an identity in the whole of life is a dramatic reduction of fear. Ken Wilber, in discussing stages of development, talks about levels of consciousness. There is a second tier of consciousness that Claire Grave talks about where fear is dramatically reduced. I'll get to that in a minute. As one moves out of the ego identity, one begins to escape the gravitational pull of the world or the identification with the temporary forms of the world. This means we begin to experience ourselves as creators of our experience rather than the victims of it. The victim state is a common denominator of the fear experience. They're always doing it to me, in this state of consciousness. As we begin to see ourselves in a larger frame, a holistic frame, the fear seems to melt away. Levels of development are really important to understanding this process of exiting the ego. Ken Wilber, Carol Gilligan, Lawrence Kohlberg, Robert Keegan, Abraham Maslow, Claire Graves, all these people have argued through their research that humans progress through a logical sequence of growth in the development of their conscious awareness of reality. All these researchers tell a similar tale of growth and development. It's a series of unfolding stages or waves. Gilligan calls the stages selfish, caring, and universal care. Another way of saying this is egocentric, ethnocentric, world-centric. Abraham Maslow created his famous hierarchy of needs with self-actualization at the top. What most people don't know is Maslow always also talked about levels above the need level that one could evolve to in spiritual consciousness. Egos have needs. People operating with an identity in the wholeness of life don't have selfish human needs, as they're identified with the whole, not a separate ego self. Claire Graves' model is called spiral dynamics. Graves says, "What I'm proposing is that the psychology of the mature human being is an unfolding, emergent, oscillating, spiraling process marked by progressive subordination of lower, older needs and behavioral systems to newer, higher order systems as an individual's existential problems change. Each successive wave or stage or level of existence is a state through which people pass on their way to other states of being." Graves called these memes, M-E-M-E-S. The first six levels are what he calls subsistence levels. At level seven, there is a huge shift in consciousness as people move into what he calls second-tier thinking. I'll talk about this in a second. Okay, here are the six levels that are egoic. First is called the beige state, basic survival needs. 1% of the population is here and 0% of the power. The purple stage, the next higher one, this is where people think that magical spirits move in the earth, leaving blessings and curses, a belief in voodoo. This is Haiti and other countries. 10% of the population, 1% of the power. The third level is called red. This is the origin of feudal empires, egocentric, heroic, archetypical gods, powerful beings, and dictators. 20% of the population, 5% of the power. The blue is number four. Life now has meaning and direction and purpose. There are now principles of right and wrong, morality, very conventional and conformist, puritanical even. George Bush and his crowd came from this meme. 34% of the population, about 30% of the power. Number five is the orange or scientific achievement meme. This is where the egoic self escapes from the herd mentality of blue into scientific rationalism, achievement, materialism, corporations, Wall Street, assumption of manipulating the earth's resources for man's gains. 20% of the population and 50% of the power. Finally, number six is called the green meme. This is where you get ecological sensitivity, freedom from greed, dogma, feelings supersede cool rationality, pluralistic relativism, against hierarchy, promoting egalitarianism, and postmodernism. This is 14% of the population, about 10% of the power. Okay, all of these are still egoic. Then something happens. There's a monumental leap in consciousness, says Graves, where, quote, a chasm of unbelievable depth and meaning is crossed. In the seventh meme, which is called the yellow meme, people can think both hierarchically and heterarchically, linking things together. In other words, people begin to see themselves as an integral part of the larger whole to which they belong. The problem with the first tier memes is, in one of those memes, one cannot appreciate the existence of the other memes. In those memes, my truth is the truth. Hence, an amazing amount of conflict, war, and death on the planet. Have you noticed that? Intolerance for other perspectives or memes or frames is rampant. Not so in the seventh and higher memes. So here are the last two memes. Yellow is called flexibility, functionality, spontaneity. See the others' memes in action in the world and see that how they've all played their part in allowing for the emergence of the second tier. This is brand new. Only 1% of the population, 5% of the power. Then the last meme that Graves identified is called the turquoise or holistic meme. This is one that unites feeling with logic, the assumption of a universal order in the design of life itself, conscious living, the ability to transcend habits of thought, there's where the Enneagram comes in, and a new spirituality free of dogma and morality. 1% of the population, 1% of the power. Okay, now we have a picture of a planet with people and societies at different levels of development. No wonder conflict and disagreement is so widespread. What one sees at one level of development is different from what somebody else sees at another level. However, while these lower levels of development can only see their reality as valid, the second tier levels see and respect all the levels that have gone before as valid in their own right. The leap to second tier thinking has to be accomplished with a lot of resistance from folks at the lower tiers. Even the green meme folks and their pluralistic thinking still think that red and blue meme folks are barbarians. So the argument can be made forcefully unless we make the shift to the second tier memes, our planet is doomed to suffer continual wars, environmental degradation, and resource depletion. And I suspect you can all notice this right now with the collapse of the ecosystem as it's ongoing. Unless we can make this shift, our continued existence is problematic. Okay. I have actually had a frame-shifting experience with the second tier memes. I've had a glimpse of the seventh tier where I can see the point of view of each of the lower level memes. For example, I saw that what George W. Bush was doing was entirely consistent with his worldview, the blue meme. His fundamentalist perspective led him to construct a reality of good guys and bad guys, and to see his job as making the world safe for capitalism. So he and all the other proponents of the different memes all see the world through these different lenses or frames, and each one is convinced that they are right. Here's another topic that's very important, the shadow. Carl Jung, the great psychologist of years past, posited that everyone, as they experience trauma and suffering as children, effectively split off parts of themselves as unacceptable so they can get love and approval from their significant others. These split off parts are what he calls the shadow. Robert Bly, the men's group guru, explores the role of the shadow in our conscious lives. He says we drag it along with us in a bag, that's his metaphor, and it constantly affects us, always being there in our consciousness. The goal of spiritual development, according to both Jung and Bly, is to integrate our shadow into our identities, i.e., make friends with the shadow. By embracing our shadows, we release tremendous energy that's being used to repress those unacceptable parts of ourselves. One of the most dramatic findings of the Graves work concerning the second tier thinking is that there is a dramatic drop in fear as one enters the second tier. As one integrates the cut-off unknown parts of ourselves, the wholeness that results effectively eliminates the need to project enemies out there. So the neoconservative U.S. administration was based very much on the production of fear of an enemy in the Muslim world. This was true of Trump. This was true of Bush. So great amounts of monies and resources were justified in so-called defense of our freedoms. For a person in a red or blue meme, this seems justified. They see a dangerous world out there, a dog-eat-dog world. And in that world, in that reality, it makes sense to prepare a lot of armaments and try to one-up other countries. But from a second-tier point of view, they aren't wrong. However, allowing them to use their resources to build empires of domination and oppression will likely have catastrophic outcomes for the biosphere and for us as a human family. Okay. This is a good argument for a world government populated with seventh or higher meme folks until we get enough people to form a critical mass of second-tier thought. We need to restrain folks from the fear-based lower memes so they can't act out their unintegrated shadows onto the world we all share. This is very, very important. You see all these school shootings. You see all these people killing each other. It's the shadow. It's the parts of themselves that they don't own yet that's running their lives. Remember, we create our reality based on our software. Well, if your software has a lot of unhealed trauma in it, you're going to see a lot of bad stuff out there that you're going to project in your consciousness. So there aren't any really bad people. They're just people that don't have shadows integrated into their consciousness. So they're projecting them onto the world and creating havoc. The shadow is actually our friend. Before we integrate it, it ties up a lot of energy. And by integrating it, we suddenly feel enlivened and more ourselves. Beliefs, attitudes, and values are thought forms, i.e., they are of the mind, and they create what's called the law of attraction, meaning that whatever you believe to be true is drawn to you so that you get to experience it. Deepak Chopra wrote a book about this, I think. And so all of this stuff in our consciousness, this is good, this is bad, I don't like this, I don't like that. This is our cultural software. We learn this through the process of socialization. Fearful, negative beliefs vibrate at a lower level of frequency than love and compassionate beliefs. So there's a lot of work been done on this. And many spiritual teachers have proposed that there's a law of quantum reality saying that like attracts like. So, if somebody's vibrating with a fear frequency, they tend to attract to themselves things to be afraid of. When we lived in Chicago, in the lakefront on Rogers Park, it was a multi-ethnic neighborhood, had a fair share of crime. Our landlady, a tiny woman with beady, fearful eyes, always locked her doors with at least five locks, took her Doberman pincher with her on her walks, and she carried a gun. She was robbed numerous times while we lived there. One has also heard about how dogs and other animals can sense it when you're afraid, and they can attack you. So, to summarize this whole chapter, the ego is a set of beliefs, attitudes, and values that has as its core the assumption that you are a separate, autonomous entity operating in an essentially hostile universe with only your mind to calculate ways to keep you from harm. Some personality types identify more with their minds, some more with being in their emotions, some more with their bodies. But whether or not your ego identity is in you as a mind, body, or set of emotions, this identity is subject to the vicissitudes and vagaries of life. So in the next chapter, what we'll do is begin to explore the question of identity. So that's enough for this one. Thanks for listening. Thank you.